5:30. Does any member of council have a change to the agenda he or she will be suggesting as we go up? Mr. Lickert?
Wanted to remove from the agenda for tonight bill number 9298 under unfinished business. I talked with the city manager today. He concurs. I'd like to spend a little more time with that. The phrase is very loose, I think, that they've added to this bill. So I'm asking that it be removed from this meeting.
Mr. Smotherson?
My change would be to add additional time. I've got some citizens that want to comment during the council meeting, and if you could just give them a little time. I'm not sure how much they have to, who will show up, but just to consider, they know it's a five-minute limit, and I just want to make sure that all of them get to speak in reference to nuisance, the nuisance study session that we're having here.
Well, we have both. We'll have time in both of the citizen comment sessions.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, anything else? Okay, if not, if you can all, Mr. Glickett, you make that suggestion when we get up there. And now, Mr. Walker.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, members of council. This evening we have with us the city attorney, Katie Forrester, and also the interim police chief, Larry Hampton, to talk to us about nuisance issues and properties in University City. I'll turn it over to the city attorney.
Okay. I wasn't sure if there were specific questions or specific areas that you wanted to discuss tonight, but first I wanted to advise council on Senate Bill 572 that was passed in August that's to be implemented by the city in January of 2017. It made some changes that affects public nuisances, municipal ordinance violations, and it has changed fee amounts that the city can charge for certain nuisance violations. So first, Senate Bill 572 amended Section 67.389 of the Missouri Revised Statutes. That section of the statutes the city has utilized to create code sections 220.010 through 220.140, and that's our public nuisance section. What the changes are is that cities are now required to provide written notice of a nuisance to the owner of the property, and if the occupant is not the owner, also to the occupant. That notice must be in writing, and it must specifically describe any nuisance that's on the property, as well as to indicate how that nuisance needs to be abated. God bless you. That nuisance needs to be provided 10 days prior. They need at least 10 days to abate the nuisance. So the city's code, we have made some proposed changes to include that 10-day notice requirement. I believe previously we had 7. And then with regards to the hearing, I recommended having it on the 11th day. So if they don't abate by 10 days or haven't made any progress to abatement, that on the 11th day hold a nuisance hearing. And that nuisance hearing will go along with the current procedures and policies of the city where if it is found to be a nuisance, they'll set a specific time period for them to abate it. If, again, it's not abated, the city has the option to go in and abate it itself and then certify the cost as a tax lien against the property. Senate Bill 572 does permit the city to go in and abate immediately if it's an emergency, if there's a health and safety risk to the public. So that still remains.
Is that 10 days? Monday through Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Included. I did business days. If you want to change it to calendar, it just says days. There's nothing specified in the statute. So, okay. I figured that way if it ended up on a Saturday or Sunday, then having the hearing, if you had a hearing on Sunday, that's not going to work. Senate Bill 572 has created a definition of municipal ordinance violations. That's new. We have also adopted that. The municipal ordinance violations includes public nuisance violations, weed violations, building code and zoning violations, and city planning violations. With regards to these, they have set max fees that can be charged, and they also include, these fees must include court costs. So for the first municipal ordinance violation, so like your first nuisance violation, you'll be charged a fee, including court costs, of $200. Then within that same 12-month period beginning with your first violation, if you have a second violation, it's $275. If you have a third violation, it's $350. If you have a fourth or any subsequent municipal violations within that 12-month period, it's $450. So that's definitely different from how the city had been previously charging fines for nuisance properties. And lastly, Senate Bill 572 has instated a requirement that the city file with the state auditor its annual certification of its compliance with these new rules, and that certification must be signed by the city's municipal judge. So that's the major changes that 572 have implemented that affect the city. I did want to talk real briefly about the weeds ordinance. It was also revised. However, it's come to my attention that the city doesn't conduct hearings for the weed ordinances. So the ordinance the city has in place was based on statute section 71-285, which requires a hearing. I recommend that the city revise its ordinance to follow more along with 67-389, which is the general nuisance statute, and then that way we'll provide the 10-day notice, no hearing, so if after 10 days the grass isn't cut, the city can then go in and mow. And I think that'll make it more mainstream and a lot easier for the city to keep up with those types of properties.
There's no penalty to us, the city, for deciding that we don't need a hearing for weeds.
No, because the general nuisance ordinance does not require a hearing. The city has always had hearings for public nuisances other than weeds, so we've continued to keep that in the ordinance. The other section is structural nuisances. I don't know if you want to get into those, condemnation, buildings that need to be repaired or torn down, if that's something you want to go through the process for that. Okay. So there's a number of state statutes that govern demolition, repair, maintenance of structures. And then the city's code section 240.020 is our property maintenance code, and that encompasses all the requirements of the statutes. Primarily, a city's ordinance must include adequate notice of the declaration of the nuisance, reasonable time for commencement of repair. If they fail to commence repair or demolition within the time specified, then a hearing must be held. The statutes require at least 10 days. The city does 21 days notice prior to its hearing. If at that hearing there's enough evidence to indicate that it is a nuisance building, that it should be condemned or rehabbed in some form, the city will issue a findings of fact and an order stating when and how the property is to be repaired. If it is determined a nuisance and the finding of facts is issued, the owner of the property has a right for administrative hearing. So they have 30 days to submit to the circuit court a request to review the administrative hearing officer's decision. So the city can't, even if they don't comply with the order, the city can't do anything until the 30 days has run. So if after 30 days they still haven't done any abatement or demolished the building, the city can then go in and take care of the property. But we do have that due process window where they get 30 days to file an appeal.
Okay, so that might apply to a building that's had a fire, a structural fire, or something of the like. How about a building that just needs painting or general outdoor maintenance?
Andrea can speak if I'm incorrect, but that I would consider to be just a general nuisance, mm-hmm. and you would get the 10-day notice to abate this and clean that up.
Okay.
This would be more, like you said, a structural vacant building there's no running water, electricity, and it's rotting, those kind of.
Okay, and then someone did bring up the issue that if it's painting, peeling mm-hmm. paint, that the weather may not cooperate,
right.
and they may not have
right.
time
and that's,
enough to do it.
That's where the changes in the fees come in. Mm-hmm. So previously you could rack up the fees for a daily. However, now with that fixed rate, the city can only charge $200 for that first offense. Mm-hmm. So if you have a second offense, they can charge you, but they can't continually charge you for that paint peeling offense.
Okay.
So you have the offense, you have the charge, you have the hearing, you say, I can't paint my house until the summer. That's what's discussed at the hearing, and that would be the order that you would go through.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. There's an element of administrative discretion with respect to the responsibilities of the inspectors, and that is if the homeowner demonstrates that they're going to do something within a certain period of time. Extensions are provided on a regular basis.
Thank you.
Are those extensions or provisions for those extensions not just for painting, like, for instance, if there's a high grass and all of a sudden there's snow in September or even like on some of the structural issues?
I mean, it's our expectation that our inspection staff, you know, apply common sense, right? Obviously, if it snowed out there today and somebody had tall grass, we wouldn't be expecting them to cut it, but we would expect them to do something when an opportunity presented itself.
Next, Ms. Forrest, I wanted to know if you could maybe do some research. When I was in Jefferson City at a Senate hearing, State Representative Kiki Curls of Kansas City introduced a bill that allows individuals other than the owners to cut grass on abandoned or nuisance properties, and it's specifically to allow neighbors who get tired of nuisance grass and so on, but also for nonprofits to abate issues. So I wanted to make sure that we could have that provision, since we do have a lot of volunteer work going on.
Okay, I'll look into that.
Thank you.
Quick question is, for instance, got an example of a collapsed garage. That's on Waldron. Who has access? Who's notified about that? And who has access to those notifications? Meaning that we've notified or cited the resident for a collapsed garage. Mm-hmm. And I mean, literally, the roof has fallen in, and it's been like that for a while. But what I want to know is that, and the problem that I have is that, you know, we have neighbors that report this on at different time frames, but how can they have access to notification, meaning so that they can know
the neighbors
where it stands, meaning if they call City Hall, if they call me, how can we give them access to those notifications? Because information is the thing that is missing in here, and being accountable, and you know what I mean?
Yes, I understand. Because
right.
In part of the statute requirement is that anyone who has an interest in the structure of the building, including neighbors, can come to the hearing and testify. I believe the notice is posted on the property. Andrea might be able to confirm that, which would state when the hearing is and the place and time.
So they can call City Hall and find out where a certain issue is with a house, a resident, and an issue.
I would defer that to Andrea for the specifics on the actual notification.
Good evening. If the council member is just talking about a typical nuisance where there's been a property maintenance violation and there has been notice, they can simply call City Hall and the department, and we will look into the property records, which are, we do make them public. Depending on the sensitivity of the nature,
sure,
we
sure.
might have to ask that a FOIA request be submitted, but they would call our office. If it's a complaint that has been filed online, there is a follow-up action step requested, and they can go in to our MyGov, which is our cloud system.
Is that
and
the
look
person
at,
that makes the complaint only?
Anybody.
If
it's been made that in through that mechanism. If it's a call-in complaint, they should call in again to follow up on that.
Okay.
Mr. Jennings?
Now, when the stickers are put on the doors, one, they're color-coded depending on the type of violation, but do they also include the court date?
The notice of hearing will be on. That would be for a condemned property or one for a condemned property. If you see something that's green, that's for a grass cutting, and that would have the date by which the property needs to be abated.
But they're not just for grass cutting. Those are the ones for peeling paint and other.
We do not put notices on properties for peeling paint or anything like that. The notice of violation is mailed to the property owner. If it's a rental property, it's mailed to the property owner and the tenant. But we don't post that for everyone to see. For example, if the mayor's house has peeling paint, we don't post a notice of peeling paint on her property. Just if it's been condemned or if it's a vacant property.
But if we're doing it on grass that's unabated, I wonder what the effect would be if we started to do it on other minor violations. Could it spur action?
I don't know the answer to that.
But, Ms. Riganti, the posting goes on the property. The neighbors are not advised by a separate flyer of an upcoming hearing on their neighbor's property.
That's correct.
Okay, so they need to look for it on the building itself.
That's
okay.
Correct.
Just a comment.
Mr. Smotherson.
Yeah, neighbors aren't going to walk up to that property and read that notice, you know, and that's, you know, not necessarily
That's my thought. Sometimes, you know, you see the posting, but you don't always feel that you can go on someone else's property to read it. But I don't know. I mean, I know we notify people about our public hearings, and I don't know what kind of manpower would be needed to notify about these types of hearings. But I wonder if perhaps it might be an article in Roars to advise people that if you see a green notice on a house, that means there's a hearing coming up or whatever it means, and you can call City Hall and find out what the date is or something like that, just to advise people of the process.
All right. And I'm not familiar enough with private property rights and what is and isn't permitted. For example, if there's an elderly person or just anyone that might not have the financial means to make or abate a property, do we want to, quote unquote, shame them into making a change and notifying all the neighbors of a situation? I'm not sure if it's a case of condemnation. I'm not sure if there are any prohibitions on that.
I'm not talking about the peeling paint. I actually respectfully disagree with my colleague here. But if a hearing is scheduled on a property, is it possible for the near neighbors to be informed of the date of the hearing? But as I said, I have no idea what kind of workload that would be. Mr. Glickert?
Back to Mr. Smotherson's scenario of Waldron. Yeah, I could see that would be a very sensitive issue where you wanted to find out if you're the neighbor what's on that posting. Yeah. And I think that now I would ask Andrea, do we have a mechanism on the website in place that shows those guidelines? In other words, you've got a sticker on that garage. You don't necessarily want to get personal. But we want to have an analytical framework there that if that poster is a certain color, then you call the city and the city can say, yeah, this is what happens with that. Do we have that in place?
We do, but we're always looking for better ways to communicate that to the public. So welcome any suggestions for making it more clear.
Okay. Yeah, I think Roars would be a good place for it to start. People read Roars.
Mr. Crow?
Katie or Andrea, how many nuisance hearings do we have in a given year? One, five, ten?
I think Andrea can. There, we have two. We have the criminal nuisance, and then we have the property nuisance. I've been to maybe five in the past 3 years for condemnation, and I think only one was condemned, and the other was a plan worked out with the owners to fix up the property.
Mr. Smotherson?
And I guess that was my question also. Do we have a record of the number of nuisance houses that we have? Is there a certain number? And then, you know, it's interesting that, and the other part of that is that you answered that you've only been to a number of hearings. We've got a greater problem, especially in the Third Ward. And I'm not trying to just identify the Third Ward and separate that as a big problem, but we got a problem. There are houses there that, I can name 6800 Plymouth. I can name the 1200 block of George. I can name Birchmount. I can name sections of U City that have absolutely been reported to City Hall, to the police, and this problem continues. So the reason that I'm asking for this, I asked for this study session, is because this is great and good. We have the ordinance in place. I'm surprised and happy to see that we actually have the laws in place. The problem that I have is that how are we enforcing that? How are we implementing and applying this? Because it's not happening out on the street. And the other thing is that people aren't aware of what's happening. So what I'd like to see from each department, meaning from the city staff, from the police department, from your office, is that there is a flow chart that we can follow, or there's a process that we can follow that neighbors can be aware of, that the residents can be aware of, and that council can be aware of. And meaning that we call on a nuisance property and it goes to the city manager, to whoever he assigns that to, whether that be the police or whatever, and they can actually follow this, because we've got to get a consistent and cohesive process through staff so that the residents, so that council can follow and say, here is an address. I've got a collapsed garage that's been sitting there for months, and neighbors are actually looking at that. Where does that stand? And they can actually call and find out, and you can report instantly because we've reported this. We've got a citation on this resident. And they can find out, or I can find out as a council person, if I get the call, where this stands. Meaning, they're in a 30-day process after the hearing. You see what I'm saying? We need to have a process in place that we can address and go to and say, here, this is where that stands. Because also, and the other thing is that, but we need to follow through with that process. We shouldn't have residents that have literally given up because they've called 3 and 4 times about a resident, about drug issues, about loud noise issues, and nothing is happening. And that's where I stand. Because I want enforcement. I want a process that we can access and use and actually see it working.
I do think we have many of those processes in place, Mr. Smotherson. However, I think a lot of residents don't know what the process is. So you might consider in this ROARS thing we're talking about or wherever else, or in the page we're doing with the school district, explaining the process of calling in a complaint as well as the online, because we have two ways people can come in, correct, Ms. Verganti?
There are multiple ways that people can file complaints. We have a hotline number. They can call into our office. We also have inspectors that do drive-bys, and they're filtered through the city manager and other folks as well.
Right. And people can call and follow up on those in their neighborhood, correct?
Correct.
But they may not know. But could I, before I go to Mr. Walker, he looks like he's pushing a button. Back in my first time on the council, I thought I remembered that we had staff, environmental staff, that was doing kind of a survey of the city every year or so. Each neighborhood would get reviewed every whatever. Do we still have that?
At the time, City Council decided not to have those biannual. Those were every 2-year exterior environmental inspections.
When was that stopped?
Probably, 5 years ago.
Okay, thank you. I didn't realize that. I've been telling people we do it. Mr. Walker?
A couple of things. That was a council directive because some of the residents were complaining that they were being harassed when our inspectors were out there. And so council directed staff to discontinue that practice. That's number one. Number two, one of the things that hasn't been discussed that I think might be helpful is the fact that when these properties are cited, dependent upon the, well, most of them, they end up in the court system, okay? And we end up having to follow a due process situation there where they're cited, let's say, for peeling paint, if we use that example. They're cited and they end up in the municipal court system, and they go and they tell the judge that they don't have any money or that they have this problem, et cetera, and are they granted an extension. And sometimes these things draw themselves out time-wise. But I can't think of any instance when we've been called and properties have been reported when we haven't been able to provide that information just in terms of when they are in the system. So,
Ms. Carr?
Actually, in corroboration with what Mr. Walker said, I had two nuisance properties that you helped me handle a few years ago. And I think what the complainants didn't understand was that there was a process. And so if we had an outline for that process, it would certainly help me to say, listen, we're going to go, this is step one, step two, step three. And I think that would be very, very helpful. And I think that in addition, I'm not into to shaming anyone. I'm much more concerned with the criminal activity and how we can address and abate that. In particular, I've heard, well, you know, we call people out because we think it's a drug house and nothing happens. So I think that's another one that we have to at least be able to address in terms of, I can say to my constituents, well, this is the process that we're going through, and yes, that house is being watched, or, you know, that you can find that complaint if you want to call the police department. They can explain it to you a little bit better than I can. But for many people, I'm their first line of contact, I think if we just had that explanation, it would be a little bit easier.
Before I turn it over to Captain Hampton, I think essentially we're talking about a different category here. You know, the property violations, which are generally cited by the property maintenance inspectors in the Community Development Department, versus some of the more criminal nuisance properties that the police have to address. So we're essentially talking about a different category. So I'll ask Captain Hampton to talk about the process with respect to those types of criminal nuisance properties, okay?
Could I, Captain, could I ask, Mr. Glickert, were you on criminal or property?
Actually, it was a question for Captain Hampton, and it has to do with a mobile barbecue pit that I reported on at Kingsland and Plymouth. And he has a garage and access to put that back in that area. He was cited. And then four weeks later, he's got that same thing sitting there at Kingsland and Plymouth. So when we cite him a second time, because it's obvious he disrespected us by having it the second time, what are we doing about that? And then my last comment is we've got to do a little bit better job with the commercial trucks on the streets.
Good evening, everyone. Like you say, specific calls or complaints dealing with trailers or trucks, or in that I believe that barbecue pit that you're referring to, it sits on a trailer. Is that what I'm saying? Okay, so that would be a violation that the officers can't ticket, but it's something that we, you know, like you said, we do have to still give them their due process in court. Once we ticket them, it's not like we're going to ticket them every day that it's out there. We have to, as something that we would speak with the prosecuting attorney and maybe the judge and let them know that this is a habitual person that's violating this ordinance in particular. So that's one way. And then we also work along with our city inspectors, Mr. Bill Landrum and Tim Scott, along and on to make sure that whatever issues that the police are not available to handle as far as personal property, being on the back of property or moving it to just out of sight just so the police can't get to that, that is still being addressed by our city inspectors. What I want to give you is a brief outline on the criminal aspect of nuisance properties as well. The majority of our reported nuisance properties are received by way of drug activity complaints, i.e. whether that's crime hotline, i.e. 911 calls, non-emergency calls to the police department, or it's crime tips website, or direct phone calls to our 725-2211 number. It doesn't have to be a person that wants to identify themselves. This can be an anonymous complaint, but these are complaints that we then take and we field, and we task our detective bureau, which is also a bureau of investigation. So if you ever hear the terms BOI, that's our bureau of investigation, that then take those complaints, and they're tasked with investigating those complaints, and they will usually conduct a consent to search at the property. That's basically asking for consent to come in your home, reference what's being alleged by whomever. Now, sometimes this does work if you have nuisance properties, but you understand at this point you're just on reasonable suspicion. So it's not something that you can go barging in someone's home and intruding. Intrusion levels must be very minor at that point. But we take that consent to search. We'll explain the circumstances to the occupant and or the owners of the property. Most of the times it's two different people. You know, whether that's a renter, a leaser, as well as the property owner who's not on site. We do explain that to all parties that's involved with that property, what we're doing and what we're doing there. So not just a renter or a leaser is being contacted by our detectives and our detective supervisors, but we will also reach out to the owner of that property. We then take, if anything is found in that consent to search, whether that's drugs, whether that's drugs paraphernalia, whether that's evidence of gambling, whether that's evidence of anything, then an arrest will be made. Summonses will be issued on the municipal level. Any evidence will be seized and placed in the original police report generated for documenting the investigation. Occasionally, with credible and verifiable information of drug complaints, the detectives may conduct surveillance of that property and conduct stops of persons coming and going in vehicles or on foot to and from that property based on at least a minimum of reasonable suspicion. We still got to have that. Okay, you can't just say we're going to target any and everybody that's in the neighborhood that's walking down that street. Now, we're on this street for this particular nuisance complaint. So we have to have the reasonable suspicion to stop somebody coming to and from that place. Now, that's to further develop our probable cause into executing a search warrant. And once you get that probable cause, then it's different ways to go about that, but we'll speak on that in a minute. Detectives conduct database inquiries of the property for all calls, reported, whether self-initiated or police reports that we take on file. Sometimes we get police reports that generate from that property, you know, where people inside the property are having disturbances, minor disturbances or peace disturbances or disagreements. We get a call or even a sick case. Sometimes it can be as simple as a sick case, a heroin overdose, and we might not know it's a heroin overdose because we're not medical experts, but we have the paramedics as well as, you know, the fire EMS to help determine it. We take that information, all of that is placed in the reports, whether or not it's pertaining to the nuisance violation itself or the nuisance alleged complaint itself. All right. A letter is then generated, a nuisance letter. There are then documented, all of this stuff is documented in a nuisance letter, which is then outlined in our nuisance violation ordinances, what have you. The letter is then hand-delivered by a detective to the head of the household or the property or the listed head of the household within our system, in our database here at University City, and the owner of the property themselves, whether they're there or not, whether they're the head of household as well. A copy of a notice is stored in our Detective Bureau database. So we keep all of these on file as well. And I'm going to get down to how many we've had within the last 3 years in a minute. If subsequent nuisance violations are reported or observed, then further action may be taken by the city, and we refer to our nuisance ordinance procedures. So we have to follow a code by our city code and charter to make sure that we're following our steps properly and we're not overstepping our means and being too intrusive and too accusatory towards someone that started with a complaint. Go ahead. Yes, ma'am.
So my question is about the voluntary
consent.
Consent. Thank you. The voluntary consent. How many people agree to that, especially if they know they have drugs in the house?
Well, you'll be amazed because whether they're trying to discredit the allegation, the complaint, or whether they're trying to cooperate, the head of household may not know what's going on sometimes in some aspects. So you will be amazed. It's a high percentage that we actually do get inside someone's home because you have detectives at the door. You're not talking about the police personnel in uniform. You actually have plain clothes in suits and what have you, and unmarked cars. So it's, like I say, it's not too intrusive for the neighborhoods. And say that you have a head of household who's kind of embarrassed by the police presence, and they don't know what their teenage child or friends of the child is doing in his basement apartment or basement, living quarters. So you would be amazed how many would allow us inside the home.
Okay. Mr. Jennings, mm-hmm. And then Mr. Smotherson.
Okay. Actually, Mr. Smotherson was on first.
Well, Mr. Smotherson.
Just a quick question, and that is, who's notified? Who has access to your notices, meaning or your reports? When you file that report you get a complaint and you file that report. Now, whatever you discover, where is that report actually submitted, and does the city manager have access? Does the city attorney have access? The city clerk, meaning that all departments are aware of what's happening
right.
at all. does that happen?
That does. That does. And why I can say that does is because if we do find charges to where we were arresting someone or summonses are issued, it's that then is moved along to our courts. However, then you still have to process the police reports as we would for any Sunshine Law request or any request to keep on file. Once we're at your residence, whether we find something credible to go along with that complaint, that alleged complaint, you know, alleged violations or not, there's a report on file. You know, if there's nothing found, the nuisance generation is still, you know, it's still generated and documented that we did certain steps and it stopped there or whatever the case is, or it's ongoing for further investigation. Now, if it's ongoing for further investigation, it's going to be a little harder to obtain a report until the case is disposed of. However, as opposed to the information, you can contact our Detective Bureau supervisors at any time, whether that's Detective Lieutenant Lemons or whether that's Detective Sergeant Davis, who actively take a role in these consent to searches and these nuisance investigations. Yes, sir.
Okay, and just a quick question, and that is not that so when that happens, the problem we run into is that there's a complaint, and we know there's something going on. I mean, people know that there's things going on, but they don't hear anything. Mm-hmm. And so how would you suggest, I mean, what you're saying is that until there is actually a report or there's actually a court case filed or something like that, how do we report what's actually happening? Because people don't hear anything for months. You know, they won't know.
Well, we actively encourage all calls to keep coming. We want any suspicious behavior reported at any time. We're the experts to check, you know, to investigate those, as opposed to a neighbor stepping out in his driveway trying to see what's this late night activity going on at his neighbor's house. We want to be called. And then that's documented how many times we go out there. That's documented how many times we're responding to that particular address. So we encourage the calls, and we understand that, you know, the wheels are not spinning fast enough, but we have to follow certain steps in that. I encourage anyone that's looking for at least some type of calming information to at least contact our Detective Bureau supervisors. If you contact me, then I would direct you, and I can even find that information out because they have to report that information on an ongoing basis. You know, so it's channeled up. All information is channeled up as well. And anything that we're finding, we do find drug paraphernalia, whether we do find drugs, whether we do, and I'm gonna give you an example real brief on that, on something very similar as far as this year, just this year that we handled. Generally, after enforcement is taken, whether that's arrest, summonses issue, action upon this receiving of the complaints, then it usually subsides. Any activity usually subsides. Now, if you're dealing with some knuckleheads that want to keep going on with illegal activity, illegal suspicious activity, then of course further action will be taken, like the surveillance, like the now the undercover work that goes into implementing or getting inside of a drug house, a suspected drug house, or further to the fact, I've been here long enough to where I've seen a criminal complaint lead to an actual homeowner losing their home. I have seen that. I mean, I've witnessed that for say, and I've been involved in that as an investigator. So it can happen, and it does happen. Now, that's something, those are a lot of wheels that spin, a lot of document reports and what have you. Real brief, there's a number of, within the last 3 years, I have at least 9 residences that were investigated for nuisance complaints on the criminal nature. And that's from 2013 through the current. And I will speak about the current as an example, which was 7100 block of Tulane. 7100 block of Tulane. The homeowner was not involved in this alleged act, was not involved in any of this alleged criminal act. However, the homeowner's granddaughter, who's caring for the grandparents, is involved in these alleged acts. And instead of it being, sometimes it's classified as a drug house, it's actually, through our investigation, we found that it was simply a flop house. And a flop house is basically where, after they've obtained their drugs in another jurisdiction, then they will come to this house and they will get high. And they will, you know, fallout, sleep, whatever the case is. So you're talking about late night people coming in and out, but the drugs is not exchanging and taking place there. And there was actually arrests dealing with this. The homeowner was notified. The head of household was notified, but the head of household is basically taking care of the homeowner. If you got my understanding, so that you have a very sticky situation to what it's not going to just stop and drop right there, because this is just as of last couple of months that we've been dealing with this, or last month, not even a couple. Yes, sir.
Mr. Jennings.
Thank you. First of all, I want to say that our police department is a fine police department. I mean no disrespect, and I'm very proud of the work that you do, especially being recognized throughout St. Louis County as one of the best. But I wanted to ask, is there a backlog of nuisance calls? Because I had a bad experience where I suffered a loss, but I had called the city manager, the nuisance hotline, the police chief, spoke about this one particular house at the focus group for probably over 3 years, and even the residents called. And it was not until this loss happened that we were able to get something done about this. I want to know, first of all, is there a backlog? It just seems like nothing really happened until, it got personal. Do we have, and you talked about this situation where the homeowner is not responsible for the drug activity, but a resident within the home, whether they're on the occupancy permit or not, is there a provision for the removal of specific perpetrators and not the homeowner forfeiting the property? Is that something that we have the ability to do, maybe even outlawing them from being on any occupancy permit?
Okay, there are provisions for, by way of arrest, by way of the homeowner, like I say, showing tough love on some aspect, or before they lose their property. But in this particular aspect that I'm speaking of, I believe this head of household, who's not the homeowner, is actually like a caretaker of sorts for the elderly grandparents, which is that's what makes it very tricky. And this is a upstairs, downstairs, duplex type of a setting. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be to see, you know, so far we've seen change in it. We've had no calls within the last whatever weeks or so, but we're still monitoring it. Just because we don't get calls of a residence doesn't mean that we're not monitoring it. And speaking of the backlog, we're able to go back as far back as 2000 to check within our current system, our Lotus Note system or CAD system, to say whether or not how many calls have been generated at this particular address, what type of calls, if a call could be unfounded, even if a call didn't generate a police report, the actual dispatching of police personnel to that address is something that's documented.
I wanted to make a note also. I've heard about other communities that take out of service police cars and have video cameras in them that they sit in front of alleged drug houses or places where there's been a number of calls, and I would like the department to consider the legality of that and the possibility of doing that, because again, many of these drug dealers are just like cockroaches. When you shine the light on them, they scatter, and I think that might be a deterrent.
And I definitely understand. I know surveillance is and video surveillance is one way we do sometimes survey residences and criminal activities. Sometimes what we're dealing with right now is a very delicate situation on people claiming to be harassed by police as well. So we have to watch and walk a very thin line on how we're going about our investigations, and we have to have at least the reasonable suspicion to be in there. Sometimes reasonable suspicion explained to the personnel that's involved is not good enough to them. You basically have to have it in black and white in written form that, okay, you got a right to be here, to be watching me, to be following me, to be doing this or that, as opposed to 15, 20 years ago, it wasn't this type of policing that's going on. It's a lot more delicate policing involved in today's system.
Mr. Smotherson?
Well, first of all, I wanted to say one thing.
with Mr. Glickard's statement, and I kind of laughed when you said mobile barbecue pit, because one of the issues we do have is barbecuing on the front porch, believe it or not. it's a real problem. But what I wanted to say before this meeting ends is, again, what I'd like to see come out of this meeting is a process that we can give residents, a process that as a councilman I can follow, they can follow, staff can follow, meaning that we all need to be on the same page in reference to, and I'm actually talking about more so about nuisance houses and criminal activity, because there are different situations, there are different categories. But the one problem that I'm really running into is the drug houses, like Mr. Jennings says. We've got it from the west end of the third ward to the east end of the third ward. And it's not just his issue. It's not just my issue. It's all of our issues. And I'm hopefully there's going to be some citizens that talk about that tonight. But the problem I have being as a council person for, 7, 8 months now, is that I want action. I need things to happen. I need a process in place that we can look at and say, this is how we proceed. This is, and we can track where that stands, because that reassures the residents that there's something happening and where and what they can do next. Right now, they have absolutely no clue. And I'm not saying that they're not reading. You know, they're not necessarily going to go read the ordinances like this. They're not going to do that.
Not at all.
Ms. Carr said it. We need a process. We need something put in place that we can follow and that we're all on the same page and that we can actually, you know, give them the reassurance that something is being done, can be done, and you know, and there is an end to this. Because some give up and say, because there is no end. The other question that I do have is, where do we stand with 1241 Pennsylvania? Because I'm absolutely sure that you already mentioned that you had a problem with the house on Chamberlain, and then that transferred to the house on Pennsylvania. So, you know, in reference to reading this, I'd like to know where we stand, because I've got residents that own houses across the street that live next door, and I'd like to know where that stands, because that's a huge nuisance.
We provided follow-up to that last week or the week before. We did have a Public Works and Parks crew out there to clean up what we could, and then the rest is assigned to a contractor to clean it up as soon as possible. We did
in reference to the backyard, did you look at the backyard at all?
The front yard we had to abate first.
Right,
the backyard we're doing as soon as we
can.
Because
that's a mess too.
Correct. It's already been cited.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay.
And he's in court.
Correct. And as Mr. Walker indicated before, you know, the changes to the state statute, as well as what we're going to adopt in the ordinance, takes away some discretion from inspectors in making recommendations for fines. Before, for example, we would recommend a maximum fine for someone such as the person on Pennsylvania as well as
sure.
Chamberlain, and the judge would either reduce that or not take into consideration staff's recommendation and continue the case. So, for example, we can make a recommendation that something happened to this property, and it's up to the court to determine what the ultimate disposition is, where there is that separation.
Sure, and this is a perfect example, because where are we? You know, where are we, and where can we? When does this end? Because he's done it before, he's done it a second time. There's nothing to say that this won't happen again. You know what I mean.
Mr. Jennings?
Yeah. And also, Mr. Glickard and I on a volunteer project remember the Chamberlain, but also there were subsequent calls and visits we made over there. And if I remember, they're at the maximum fine amount on Chamberlain's. So what do we do after they've been at the maximum fine amount and we've been over? What's the recourse?
So there needs to be a distinction in everyone's mind between the statutory or ordinance definition of a nuisance property and the internal working problem property that's within our department. So it's placed on our problem property list where inspectors visit the property on a weekly basis to ensure there aren't any new violations. And if there are any new violations, we issue a new citation. And the cycle of due process does repeat itself again. But
it start at the lower level again with the smaller fines and work its way up for every offense, or do we start at the highest level since they've reached it?
We have to go by what the new ordinance now.
Okay. Lastly, you done?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I think also we got to find a way to make, encourage our residents to be more vigilant. The young people have this thing about us. Snitches get stitches, and so they don't want to be involved and they don't want to tell. A lot of the residents have complained about different houses, and I've asked them, have they called the nuisance hotline? And some have said they've called the police, and the police have showed up at their house, singling them out and making them apparently the ones who've called on them. But it's got to be a way, maybe in roars, that we ask strongly for the residents' help, because, the kids can't come out and play. The elderly are afraid at night. And I mean, specifically, this property by my house had drive-up traffic on weekends and nights. And I almost just feel bad that if we had done something earlier, I wouldn't have experienced a loss. But it just seems like they just have more courage than we do. And I just hope we can find a way the city ramp up our efforts to stop, but also we got to get residents not afraid to call.
Ms. Carr?
I'd like to ask Captain Hampton, if someone calls and they say that they would like to do this anonymously or semi-anonymously, do your officers then go to their homes in front of other people, or can you call them back at some later point?
There's several levels of like say of being anonymous. We don't contact anyone that desire to remain anonymous in any complaint. Now, if there's a young officer that makes a mistake, then we admonishes that officer. We re-instruct that officer on the proper ways of handling these calls. And we make sure we apologize if it's ever done. That hasn't been done in quite some time that I can speak of, that I can recall. Because I'm, as being the inspector of early warning system, of the inspector of internal affairs for the department, that's a very serious complaint. And when we take that complaint, because we don't want to put anyone in jeopardy of being identified by way of a mistake that we make. So that's something that we don't take lightly, that we will actively investigate within internal. But no, remaining anonymous, that means not giving any information, not having to give any information, even to the dispatcher that you're speaking to. So just making a phone call, and that's it.
Thank you.
Okay, we're just about ready to wrap up. I'd just like to make one more point. If we do something in roars, Mr. Walker, that kind of details the whole process and all of that, I hope we can, on the property maintenance violation specifically, kind of give people an idea of what they are. Because I have gotten calls from people who were complaining about neighbors, and the things they were complaining about are not against our ordinance. So it's not... just because you don't like someone on something on a neighbor's property does not mean it's violating the law. And it would be helpful, I think, if people had an idea of what those violations are. And saying that, we have about eight.
I have one question.
Oh, Mr. Crow?
Not about this. I see that to the city manager and to Katie, I see we've got something on the agenda for a special counsel. And since Katie is here, I'm hoping that you'll be here during the regular session so that we can ask you questions on that matter. Okay. Thank you.
Anything else? Okay, thank you. We will be up at the dais at 6:30. Thank you.